You are listening to Two Booked Up, a podcast about business and personal development books and the conversations they ignite. I'm Shelley Tonkin-Smith.
And I'm Rowena Mabbott. Today on Two Booked Up, we're continuing the conversation about Gretchen Rubin's book, The Four Tendencies, which we started in our last two episodes. Today we're focusing on business and how knowing your tendency can support you as a business owner.
We're going to be covering the full gambit of what it takes to run a business, from crafting an offer to marketing and messaging. Then we're going to cover sales and delivery and the day-to-day running in between. And then we're going to apply the four tendencies to all of that. So whatever your tendency, upholder, obliger, rebel, or questioner, it's our aim to help you harness your tendency strengths to be a successful and happy business owner. Hi, Rowena.
Hi, Shelley.
It's so great to be chatting with you about Gretchen Rubin's The Four Tendencies again here on Two Booked Up. But before we get to that, can you tell me and our listeners, what are you reading at the moment?
Well, I've just finished reading Digital Minimalism by Cal Newport. Over the past year or so, I've been working on reducing the time I spend on social media and email. And I found Digital Minimalism has had some great new ideas for how I can be more intentional about my use of digital tools, as well as kind of some good timely reminders. And the book is very well researched, which I always enjoy. I really enjoyed the practical tips shared because I always like when an author uses illustrative stories as examples of how people have applied the ideas that they're talking about in the book. Now, probably that's also why I enjoyed reading The Four Tendencies, as the stories help make it more relatable. So how about you, Shelley? What are you reading at the moment?
Yes, I am rereading a book. It's a homeschooling book, and I credit this book with being what's quote-unquote converted me to homeschooling. It's called The Call of the Wild and Free by Ainsley Arment. And I read it over 2 years ago on my Kindle, and I recently decided it's such a special book, I wanted the hardback. And it's so gorgeous. It's got full color photographs taken by moms in Ainsley's Wild and Free community. And it's really been such a joy to revisit this book now that I'm 2.5 years into the homeschooling journey. And new things stand out to me. And then in other parts, I'm like, yes, obviously. But when back in 2020, my mind would have been blown by all of these ideas. So I do recommend the book to those of our homeschooling listeners. But even if you're not into homeschooling, I'm just going to sing the praises of rereading books that have been formative for you, because the same book can hold different insights depending on when you read it in your life.
I am so in agreement with you, absolutely. And that's definitely something that I've experienced rereading The Four Tendencies. So that's probably a good place for us to start today's discussion on how we can apply The Four Tendencies to business and entrepreneurship. So let's start off with what might seem like a pretty controversial question. So is there a best tendency for an entrepreneur or a business owner? In other words, is there a tendency that's particularly primed for entrepreneurship?
This is a good question to tackle at the start of the episode, because there is no best tendency for being an entrepreneur. But I think when we think of an entrepreneur or a business owner, I think we start thinking of stereotypes like Steve Jobs. And to me, Steve Jobs was a real rebel. He didn't want to do things the normal way. He was all about being different. And it often feels like a lot of other famous entrepreneurs are rebels. I also think of Sarah Blakely, who is the inventor and entrepreneur behind Spanx. And she warns against seeking feedback from your friends and loved ones just because you want validation or approval for your idea. So she's all about forging ahead without having people's approval. And so to me, that way seems that entrepreneurship is very primed towards rebels and maybe questioners. And probably on the surface, it kind of seems to preclude obligers. when I tell people I work from home, a lot of people will say to me, oh my goodness, I wouldn't have the discipline. I just wouldn't get up in the morning. And the truth is you would, you totally would, even if you are an obliger, because you have the external expectations of your clients waiting for you. So I want to say that entrepreneurship definitely doesn't exclude obligers. I know plenty of really excellent entrepreneurs who are obligers. And then as for the upholders, I think upholders' strengths include being very consistent and very self-motivated. And that's going to be very useful on the entrepreneurial journey as well for upholders.
And yes, as an upholder myself, I also know that we need to be kind of careful of being too rigid and maybe too stuck in our ways. And something that I think can come up for questioners is analysis paralysis. Because both questioners and upholders, I think we sometimes want to make it perfect. And then that means we want to find the absolute best solution before we move forward with anything. And as an entrepreneur, truly, sometimes you have to be a little bit scrappy and take imperfect action. The key word there being action.
Yeah, yeah. That's so true. And then just circling back to the rebels, we kind of sometimes believe we are these best entrepreneurs and most innovative and we've got these great ideas. But believe me, as a rebel myself, I think our lack of consistency can sometimes be our downfall because we sometimes don't commit to any of the ideas because we don't want to be bound by one particular idea. So all that to say, there is no best tendency for being an entrepreneur. But instead, what you want to do is harness the strengths of your tendency, to know your tendency, and then to leverage that. If you can do that, you really can be the best entrepreneur or business owner that you can be.
I totally agree. It is all about playing to your strengths.
Okay. So let's just talk a little bit about what it actually takes to run a business. What do we need to do in order to be an entrepreneur and a business owner? So I want to just break it down into those parts, and then we're going to have a look at how that relates to the four tendencies. So to run a successful business, you basically need to make an offer, and somebody has to exchange their money for that thing you're offering. Whether that's a service or a product, you need some kind of thing to go and offer people. And then you need to tell people about that offering. So this is where we're talking about your marketing. And this also involves often educating your market, nurturing your customers and potential customers, and that kind of content marketing side of things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's easy to get caught up in that marketing side of things and forget that we actually have to sell our offering. And to do so, you have to make the sale. So that's the real sales piece of the business. And then you need to deliver that offering. So you really need to deliver on what you've promised. And finally, when you're running your business or as an entrepreneur, you've got your admin and your setup that happens in between and behind the scenes. So these are the day-to-day things that you do to keep running in the business. So maybe it's doing your bookkeeping or replying to emails or customer support or those sorts of things.
Okay, cool. So we've got product development or offering. Then we've got marketing and messaging. We've got your sales. We've got your delivery. And then we've got the day-to-day and in-between stuff. So we're going to have a look at what it means to run a business from each of those parts and then how the different tendencies come into play. So let's start with offering, the thing that you're selling. So I'm going to start with the rebel tendency, of course, since I'm a rebel myself. So the strengths of a rebel are that they've got this high value on freedom, on choice, on self-expression and authenticity. Rebels can do anything we want to do if we link it to our identity. We can also act as though ordinary rules don't apply to us rebels. And that really, I've found, can be an advantage of an entrepreneur. Just rethinking some of the norms and the way things have always been done. Rebels love variety. We love independence and we love to be rewarded for our creative and out-of-the-box ideas and solutions. So it's important for rebels to build this knowledge into what we offer the market. I think a rebel's strength is finding innovative offerings, finding offerings that are different, that leverage new approaches or new tech. But then we also have to understand that we need to connect with a wide variety of customers and potential customers who might not be ready for all our innovation. And I think some rebels may feel misunderstood. And I think questioners can fall into this as well. They feel that they've got this creative, innovative offering and that everyone should totally love it. And unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. You're going to have to be ready to do some market education and bringing people on board and bringing people into this creative offering. But we'll get more into that when we talk about marketing. But Ro, what do questioners need to look out for when they're designing an offer?
Yeah, thanks, Shelley. So questioners, as I mentioned before, can fall into analysis paralysis. So they generally want to find all the answers and make sure they're the best answers before they take action. And so they can end up not actually starting their business because they get stuck instead of taking an entrepreneurial leap of faith. But this analysis can definitely be a strength as you design your offer if you channel it correctly. So if you're a questioner, you'll be great at researching your market and finding out their real problems. Your questions will also help you to be more efficient in your business. And questioners are also great at customizing. So your the perfect business for you could be taking an existing proven process or method and then improving its efficiency and making it your own. This gives you a really unique approach to take to the market, but the market will already be really familiar with the original method, which makes it easy for them to kind of see the value in what you're offering.
Yes, that really helps. It makes me think of one of your limited offers that you did, your Quick Clarity Coaching, where you offered unlimited coaching for a whole month, but in 20-minute little power sessions. And it's still coaching, so people still understand the idea of coaching, but then you've got the slightly different approach in the way you package it. So I'd love to actually talk more now about your tendency, Ro, the upholder. Have you used your tendency to craft your offerings?
Well, in terms of an offer, upholders, we are pretty good at coming to the market with a very defined offer and clear expectations. So my flagship coaching program is very clearly defined and structured, which is great for me as an upholder entrepreneur. And it's also really supportive for my clients because they know they're going to be supported and held in a way that is nurturing and helps them develop and achieve their goals. But equally, upholders, we do need to be a little bit careful of being too rigid. And that's why personally I've tried to be open to experimenting with offers like the Quick Clarity Coaching you mentioned. But I will still always maintain my full coaching program, because it's my most comprehensive offer and it's really the way I see the biggest benefits and transformations for my clients.
Yeah, I like that. It gives you and your clients like the best of both worlds of like a proven process, but without the rigidity, and using your upholderness as a benefit to your clients and to you. And then let's just talk about the obligers and how they could approach structuring their offering. Because I think as entrepreneurs, the challenge unique to obligers is going to be difficulty in saying no. So they would get requests from clients and they could get requests from other entrepreneurs. Oh, like, you know, could you do this for me? And even in your personal life, your family, they hear that you're now working from home and have your own business. And so they think you're free for a coffee all the time. So I think obligers are going to have trouble saying no to the other person because they want to uphold the expectations of the other person. And then of course there's the obliger's need for external accountability. Now, this is not exactly a weakness. It's not a weakness at all. It's just something that as an obliger, you're going to have to build into your business. So you can do this by having an accountability group or hiring a coach like Rowena or a mentor or partnering with other entrepreneurs or anything that will give you an external accountability. But the thing is, when you're in your own business, you're working for your clients. So you've got that external accountability built in. But when we're looking at your offering obligers, what I would suggest is to really get clear on defining your offering. Because when you start working with a client, everyone is very excited to work together. But then because you have trouble saying no, as an obliger, you'll then take on more work. And it's like what's called scope creep or feature creep. And you'll find yourself doing more and more and more for this client because you really do want to please them. And you feel like they've created this expectation and you want to meet it. So my advice to obligers is to really clearly define your offer, set clear boundaries. Things like contracts are very important. And in addition to like that legalese of a contract, I think it can even be outlining like, this is what I'm going to do and this is what I won't do. I found that very helpful, is put a list of what you won't do, because they're often parts of your service that you're like, oh, but isn't like doing a logo the same as a part of doing the website? So I will like put, I don't do your logo, and just list some of the things that I do not do under a particular service offering.
Yeah, I love that, Shelley. That's such good advice around how obligers can ensure they are setting themselves up for success. So now that we have an offering that we can take to the markets, we actually need to do some marketing and messaging. Like, you actually need to tell the market about your offer. And this is the part that many of us get quite invested in and spend a lot of time in, because in the world of online marketing, this often involves a measure of content marketing and some education. So Shelley, as a copywriter, I know this is your zone of genius. Would you like to weigh in here?
Yeah, sure. I think for all tendencies, I think having a bit of a roadmap for the customer journey can be helpful. So I've got a framework called Launch and Love It. I'll share it in the show notes. But essentially what I teach there is that you're taking someone from a casual surveyor of your website to the point that you're selling your product or service to them and even making second sales and repeat business. But I think in the world of content marketing and personal branding, I think rebels are quite suited to this idea of authenticity and identity, of actually making your business about you as a person and bringing across your actual personality into the business. But I think even there, like for me, I don't want to be completely bound about what I'm sharing in my business. So I don't want to talk about every aspect of my life, say on my Instagram feed, for example. I still want control over how much I share. But I think also obligers and the other tendencies can tap into this like personal branding idea. Obligers can be like, oh, I'm showing up every week to serve my audience. So I know you are so good at being consistent with this kind of content marketing, Roy. But can you tell us about how you communicate with all four tendencies in your business?
For sure, yeah. Like, I've had to think quite carefully about my messaging in terms of my coaching, because as an upholder myself, I am very focused on intention. It's one of my guiding words in my life. And so being intentional about your life, setting intentions, setting expectations, and working on a journey towards achieving those intentions. So that was a big part of my business from very early days of coaching, just like it's a big part of my life. Another area is clarity, and that's another one of my key words. And I have actually marketed myself frequently as helping people with confidence and clarity, because when we have greater clarity, we are more confident. But these words particularly definitely appeal to questioners as well as upholders. In fact, in the book, Gretchen says that questioners are seeking clarity when they want answers to their questions. So they need clarity before they can move forward and take action. So their intention and clarity pretty much, I feel, cover both upholders and questioners in my audience. So I was like, okay, I've nailed that. But I was a bit concerned I might not appeal to the obligers and the rebels in my audience. And so I did take a good look at my marketing and messaging. And I realized that obligers really needed accountability, like we've talked about. They need external accountability. And so as a coach, I'm in a perfect position to provide that. It's also one of the major parts of my service and my offerings. So it was just a matter of explicitly outlining the benefits of external accountability and then showing how coaching with me could provide that accountability. Because after all, obligers are in fact the largest group of the population. But accountability is really an interesting one for rebels, because as Shelley, you've told us, you don't actually like to be told what to do. But I do think intentional living can be quite resonant with you and with rebels, because you're attached to your identity. And I know for you, Shelley, intentional living is something that's a big part of you living out your values. But I think what's also appealing for rebels is the individual coaching strategies that I can provide, particularly my one-on-one signature program, because it's a fully customized program.
Mm. Yeah, and I think a rebel's going to like that individuality, that customization. And I think what you've shared there, it strikes a really great balance across the four tendencies. And I think it's a great example of how you can bring the four tendencies into your messaging. And as we talked about before, using that framework that Gretchen Rubin shares in the book of information, consequences, and choice. I think that's a really good way to appeal to all four tendencies. And the other thing that I think will appeal to all four tendencies in messaging is the universal appeal of story. I think for all of us as human beings, we respond to stories. And I've got a nice little framework to tell a good story. You need, especially in the marketing kind of context, you need a problem, you need a solution, and a result. So problem, solution, results. So I often use this in case studies and in testimonials, but you can weave that into your messaging on your about page, in your social media content, because I think using stories, again, with that clear problem, solution, and results, the transformation, you can appeal to people of all tendencies.
Absolutely. And I think that's key, because when it comes to the next part of our business process, sales, we actually do want to appeal to as many people as possible. We won't be for everybody, but we still need to appeal to a good proportion in order to get those sales. So let's move on to the sales piece, because for many business owners, I suspect this is the most awkward part, actually asking for the sale and closing the sale. And so it's at this point where perhaps questioners do the best, as they will be happy to ask the question, is this a yes for you? So, you know, like holding a sales call or discovery call and asking as part of the close, is this a yes for you? So I find that as an upholder, it helps me to have my sales process mapped out. So I have an intake questionnaire when a person books a complimentary consult or a discovery call with me, and I have a predefined format for that discovery call, including a prompt at the very end to remind me to ask the sales question, because when I haven't had my prompt, I've frequently forgotten. So we've had a lovely chat with someone and I forgot to ask for the sale. So how about you, Shelley? How do you handle sales?
Yes, sales, it is. I think it is a little bit awkward. And I think I came from a company where we had a sales team and I was always very separate from sales, but I did a lot of the product development. So I've found that as a solopreneur now, also pre-planning my sales process makes it a little bit easier. And from the rebel perspective here, it helps me to get rid of some of the mundane, repetitive tasks that you have to do to close a sale. So I use tech to kind of automate things like the scheduling of the call and the intake questionnaire. And then I'm trying to also streamline things like doing a proposal, doing my invoicing, signing a contract. All of those kinds of things can stall the sale and prevent you from closing a sale. I kind of see it as a dating period. It's that I want to get that dating period over so that me and the client can start working together. So, of course, it means that I need to invest time into putting the processes in place. But then once the process is in place, I can forget about it. It also, as a rebel, I think it gives me a bit of structure to push against. And then within that structure, I can then customize and make it my own for particular clients. But it's a good starting point.
And I love that, Shelley, because I think this is where, even though we're opposites on the four tendencies framework as upholder and rebel, there's a lot of similarities there, because I similarly automate the scheduling of the call, use tech to do that, have the intake questionnaire, streamline things like the proposals or invoicing and signing of contracts. So I love that you are using it, the same tools, and we're doing the same outcome, but we're coming at it from a very different perspective. And I just want to draw our listeners' attention to that, because just because Shelley or I share something and say, well, I'm an upholder or Shelley's a rebel, doesn't mean that you, a questioner or an obliger, can't get to the same outcome just by slightly tweaking the way you think about it, which I think is really important, especially when we're going to talk about the next part, which is part of having a structured sales process that is going to help all of us, but it's going to help an obliger as well, is because sometimes obligers, but also I have to say upholders, when we're hearing other people's expectations, we're hearing what they want, and particularly obligers might think, gosh, yes, I can do all of this for you. I want to do everything for you, even though it's not really part of my business or I don't really have capacity. I'm going to do it for you. Please just say yes, because we're so keen, obligers particularly, so keen and motivated to deliver on other people's expectations. So the challenge then is that obligers could end up over-promising and either again getting burnt out or under-delivering. And for most obligers, honestly, it'll probably be being burnt out or potentially obliger rebellion. So as an obliger, I would say a pre-planned sales process can help protect you from taking on expectations that go beyond what you're prepared to deliver. And so I think somewhere in your sales process, like Shelley mentioned before, it's going to be really useful to outline what is not included in your offer. So for example, you might not say unlimited email support. You might say reasonable email support. Or as Shelley mentioned, you might say, I'll do your website, but I don't do logos. So you don't have to offer everything. And I think most people appreciate the clarity around knowing what they're getting and not getting. And so that way they know not to ask for things that aren't included. And you also don't have to say no further along the line and be in an awkward situation where you feel uncomfortable saying no to something that you actually don't want to do.
So talking further along the line, that's where we're going to pivot to next in our conversation, is the delivery piece of running a business and how that the four tendencies can deliver their product or service. So for me, delivery often involves deadlines. And as a rebel, this can sometimes be hard, but look, I've made my peace with deadlines. I've done things like really setting spacious deadlines. You know, if I think it's going to take me a week, I'd make it 2 weeks. I'd like double my deadlines. I'm also experimenting, especially in my copywriting, with giving a client a deadline date range. So I feel then I can bring in a bit of spontaneity into the way I deliver my projects, but then I can still deliver what I've promised to my clients. And I think people would be happy with that kind of date range. And I almost in my head would say I did need to deliver it at the beginning of the deadline, but then I've got the spaciousness within the date range. And yeah, I think questioners can also battle with deadlines, especially if they are arbitrary deadlines. So I've seen with my questioner husband that if a questioner uses the strength of analysis, like my husband is really good at predicting how long a project can take. So he can usually deliver and usually ahead of deadline, but don't come and give him an arbitrary deadline. Like he'll resist against that. But I do think that deadlines are quite helpful for upholders and obligers during the delivery part of business. Is that right, Ro?
Yep, absolutely. But again, I also encourage our obligers and my fellow upholders to set realistic deadlines, or as you said, Shelley, which I quite like, spacious deadlines. I love that term. Not deadlines that are going to burn you out or that are going to stretch you beyond your limits. So upholders, we're self-directed, and so we're generally able to run projects and meet deadlines. We're good and keen often to meet expectations around performance targets, and we can be pretty motivated to improve on our own stats. So we are those sorts of people, kind of like questioners, where we get a little bit interested in our own data and our own stats, like, could I finish this in this many days? And last time it took me 7 days. Could I get it done this time in 6 days? And also, just by the way, we upholders, we love being rewarded and recognized for excellence and productivity, just if ever you want to give some lovely feedback to your fellow upholders. One of the challenges of being an upholder is that we are a bit reluctant to delegate. Sometimes that could look like we are a bit of control freaks, but it's actually more because we often suspect others aren't dependable. And it also means we can be a little bit inflexible when it comes to change. And some of us with upholder tendencies can be judgmental of others who don't meet expectations. Upholders can also take on a lot when expectations require it and may end up with far more than we can handle without really realizing that we've got ourselves into that position. I also want to talk about some of the challenges for obligers, which also happen to be their strengths. So obligers, as we said earlier, they put a very high value on meeting commitments to others and going the extra mile. So as a client of an obliger, it's fabulous, right? Obligers are, you know, like the friendly person that everybody loves because they are reliable and they work beautifully with everybody else. So as business owners, they are great to work with, obligers, because they always deliver for their clients and customers. That said, they do require deadlines, sometimes monitoring and deliverables and other forms of accountability. But if there are other things that are not directly linked to their clients or customers, it can be tricky for them to deliver. That said, key to their success is absolutely ensuring a fair distribution of work and ensuring that the business model that they choose supports them being rewarded for delivery. So not one where they can freelance or gigging or working on longer term projects without any client or customer liaison. That's not going to really work for an obliger. Instead, work that's rewarded and recognition for efforts that go the extra mile will be an absolute winning combination for obligers.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think if you are an entrepreneur and you're kind of feeling a little bit burnt out or there's something wrong in your business, go and look at your business through the lens of your tendency and go and see, are there some tweaks that you can make? So with that, we're going to move on to just everything that falls in between that process that we've just covered now is the day-to-day, the admin, all the kinds of things that you have to do to run a business. So, Ro, can you tell us a little bit about the way you run your business on a day-to-day basis as an upholder?
Sure, happily. So as a coach and business owner, my biggest challenge personally is my reluctance to delegate because it means I do everything in my business, which to be honest is not always the best decision when I consider both my time, my energy, and the focus that I have for my work. But on a more positive side, we upholders can embrace the expectations of everyone and we don't want to let anyone down, including ourselves, which means we're very reliable, consistent, and punctual. So consistency and getting things done is not the problem for us. Rather, as I mentioned before, it's kind of finding out we've taken on too much. So for everyday business operations, upholders, listen up. Here's what I've found works well for both myself and my other upholder entrepreneurs, which is we do really well when we streamline, when we simplify, and when we automate decisions or actions that lend themselves to that approach. So that can include things like I do, which is scheduling and batching of work. Because that works really well for me as an upholder, as it supports me meeting the expectation, but also frees up time later so I can focus on other things. Plus, it makes me feel super productive. And as I mentioned before, upholders, we love having other people tell us, wow, you're so productive. Like, that's like a pat on the head for us, because we are a bit funny like that. What about you, Shelley? How do you find day-to-day running of your business as a rebel?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, we can be funny in our own ways, of course, as well as rebels. So the day-to-day running of my business can sometimes seem a little intimidating. So there are so many expectations when it comes to running your business. You know, like I think you open your email inbox and it's like, oh, expectation. And like for a rebel, it just like feels like there are so many expectations to resist. So one of my tricks is to start small. So when I'm feeling that overwhelm and they're like, oh, there's so many expectations on me, I just make a start, a very small start. And then in a way that if I'm starting small, I can let go of any expectations to create something big and magnificent because then that brings with it resistance. And just do the thing, just like do the small steps. So as a rebel, I tend to resist the expectations involved with schedules, with routines and anything repetitive. But it's really important to me to have this identity of being a superb business owner and an excellent mom. And that's what motivates me to do like mundane things like, oh, I need to do my banking and my money management like once a month. And so even though that's mundane, I go for it. I do it because I want to be a really good business owner. And I want to kind of show people that this works, that this is what I can be. And then I've also found that bringing a bit of variety into my workflow helps a lot. So, Ro, you know that I love using so many different tools. So like when I was planning this podcast, I used index cards to organize the podcast episode. And then sometimes I'll use a Google Doc, but then sometimes I'll talk out my ideas and use a transcription tool. Sometimes I'll use like a Kanban board, like Trello. So I've got all these processes, but I feel like I'm constantly changing the tools that I use. And some days I feel like key cards, like something handwritten, and sometimes I feel like something electronic. So yeah, I think Ro, you're sometimes very surprised at me because you're the pillar of consistency to me, and you've got this repeatable process. But I do believe that ultimately we both get the job done, and we're both very strong business people because we play to the strengths of our tendencies, and that applies to everyone.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I would say also that there are strengths for every tendency. So if you're an obliger listener, for example, you're unwilling to miss deadlines, which encourages you to maintain a productive schedule. You would feel that not meeting the expectations placed on you is a symbol of failure. And so you would pretty much do anything to avoid that designation. So you can also be consistent and get things done by embracing external accountability. So this could be explicit with customers or clients who are relying on your service or product, or it can be implicit, like committing to send a newsletter on a certain day every week. One of the ways you can even trick yourself is by writing it on a list. Some people actually find the list is enough of an external obligation that being able to check it off the list gives them that external accountability. So a few obligers have found that works well too. And as for questioners, as long as you're working on things that you deem important, you have absolutely no trouble staying consistent and productive. The trick for you, though, is to ensure you don't get stuck thinking about the problem or trying to come up with the perfect solution. So connecting with your purpose and the why of what you're doing will keep you motivated and focused.
Wow, that all sounds really so brilliant. And I think it's been so helpful for me to reflect on how the tendencies are showing up in my business. And as we've said, whatever our tendencies, we all want to achieve our goals and we all want to live a beautiful life. So on that note, listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Given all that we've shared here, do you know your own tendency? Have you taken the quiz? How has that tendency impacted the way you run your business? And we really would love to continue the conversation. So you can do that on Instagram. We're going to post up a post about this podcast episode, and then you can just comment on that and reply to us. So I'm Shelley Smith Creative on Instagram. And Ro, where can our listeners find you?
I'm Rowena Mabbott on Instagram. And yes, as Shelley mentioned, we'll put up a post on our Instagram feeds when a podcast goes live. Speaking of which, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about Two Booked Up. Remember, that's T-W-O, Booked Up. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also contact us through our website, twobookedup, that's twobookedup.com. And that's where you can also find show notes from this episode. And then please subscribe to the podcast in your podcast player. Or in some podcast players, you can say follow. So that's the best way to get all our future episodes, because then they come and auto-download for you.
Yeah, we love that. It makes it so much easier because it's one less thing you have to remember to do. It's automating things. Fantastic. All right. So that's all for this episode. In our next episode, we'll be talking about knowing ourselves better and how knowing ourselves better has helped us in our business and just generally in life.
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to that conversation, that the four tendencies has really ignited this bigger idea of knowing ourselves. So stay tuned for more Two Booked Up. That's T-W-O, Booked Up. Goodbye for now.